business.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mind.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
That's right, folks. Except for tonight, there is no Alan. He
got the head
out on us. Yep. So we grab, you know, some other replacement guy who just happened to be, you know, available. What's his name?
Jono Bacon from Lug Radio.
Yeah.
Welcome, Jono.
Hello, Jeff.
How's everything at 12:30 in the morning over in Wolverhampton?
It's pretty late, but this is fairly normal, to be honest. You know, I'm a single man. I'm alone in a house by myself. You know, it's welcome to my world.
And you're a man of the internet, so you're up at all hours, right?
I don't know what you're trying to insinuate by saying I'm a single man and I'm a man of the internet, but I don't like where you're going.
He's trying to insinuate that he's seen the pictures. That's what he's trying to do.
Well, we'll leave the strange links and insinuations to Dan.
What?
Never
good.
Mind, Dan.
So you're just counting on to...
So how have you been, Jono?
Good. Yeah, everything's kicking over quite nicely. Busy, as usual. Life doesn't stand particularly still in the Ubuntu world, shall we say. So we've been really busy with a lot of stuff recently, and then in addition to that, I've been spending a lot of my time, in my spare time, working on Lug Radio Live in the US, which has been a heck of a lot of work as well. But things are pretty good right now.
Plus, you do a lot of traveling, right?
Yeah. I actually was planning on this year being less of a travel year, because last year I spent a huge amount of time out visiting various places, but this year is looking just as mental as it normally is. So,
I have one question for you.
Yeah.
How many conferences have you attended in the last 12 months?
Oh, I don't know. I've lost count. I mean, it's probably, I don't think that many. I think there's people who do a lot more than me. But I think in 2007, I probably visited about maybe 10 or 15, something like that.
I don't know who's gone to more, you or Jeremy Garcia.
He gets everywhere. He really does. He's a cool guy. I mean, I always see him at the SoCal Linux Expo in Los Angeles, and we always
The pictures.
Yeah, Dan was very upset. Dan stole Jeremy away from Dan.
That's his boyfriend. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Really.
Yeah, they hooked up in Boston at Linux World Expo a couple years back, and.
Wow.
It's never been the same.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's pretty scandalous. Yeah, it's pretty scandalous, actually.
I don't want to think about that particular scenario, to be honest with you.
Oh, man. So tell us about Lug Radio Live, man. That's a big deal.
Yeah, basically, as some of your listeners may be aware of, there's this other podcast that's far superior called Lug Radio, and for the last 3 years or so, we've been doing this live event called Lug Radio Live, and it's very much designed to be quite a loose, social, friendly kind of environment, and we kind of coin it a rock conference in the fact that we really try to make it like a bit of a gig sort of thing, so it's a lot of fun. And it's gone on to some really good success in the UK community event in the UK for people to go to. But in the US, we were getting a lot of hassle from our American fans saying, come over and do an American event. So we were always really reluctant to do it because we said, you know, if you if somebody volunteers to do all the organization, we can advise them, but we don't want to do all of the specific work because we just don't have time to do two Lug Radio Lives. And then basically Leslie and Kat from Google stepped forward and said, we'll help you out. We want to make it happen. So Google have put an enormous amount of effort into Lug Radio Live US. And it's going to be happening on the 12th and 13th of April at the Metreon in San Francisco. And there's over 35 speakers, going to be about 40 exhibitors. It's going to be a really awesome weekend. So we've been spending a lot of time working on this, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Sounds like a good time, man. I wish I was going.
Yeah, it's a shame you guys can't make it. I mean, we emailed all of the other, well, a bunch of the other podcasts, not necessarily all of them, to sort of say, come along and, you know, get involved. Because we thought it would be really cool to get everyone, you know, like the Linux Action Show, Sesame Street characters to come along, and, you know, you guys and, you know, Chess Griffin and, you know, a few
others. It would be awesome. The unfortunate part is that, much unlike England, San Francisco is a really freaking long way away from Pennsylvania, you know?
Yeah, it's marginally closer than going to Wolverhampton.
Yeah, it's just marginally, though.
Everything about this whole experience of organizing Lug Radio Live has been mind-blowing in the fact that, you know, American geography, I was aware of it beforehand, but the fact that to go from one part of California to the other part of California takes hours and hours and hours to do. Mm-hmm. It's too much for our simple British minds. And the sheer logistics of running an American event is just ridiculous compared to the UK. I mean, we've had to deal with the wrath of the unions and all that kind of stuff and how things work and all these bizarre rules and legislation, and it's a pain in the ass, it really is. So, but we're getting there slowly.
Well, San Francisco's a fun town, man, and from all accounts, Lug Radio Live is a great event, and I expect to hear good things about it from people who actually attend.
Yeah, hopefully it should work out. The other thing which I should point out that some of your listeners might be interested in, if they are thinking about going, we've actually got an opportunity available for people to win a couple of prizes, because we encourage people to go to the website, which is lugradio.org/live, and to pre-register a ticket. But to encourage people to pre-register, what we're doing is we've got the opportunity to win one of the new little Asus Triple EPCs and one of the Neuros OSD media devices, as well as a bunch of O'Reilly books and Lug Radio T-shirts. And basically the idea is that when you get people to register, if you recommend someone to go to Lug Radio Live and they pre-register, it'll ask for your name. So get them to put your name in there, and the person who refers the most number of people can win the Asus Triple EPC, a couple of O'Reilly books, and Lug Radio T-shirt. And everyone who they refer as well will also win an O'Reilly book and a Lug Radio T-shirt. So there's a good opportunity to win some stuff as well if you recommend people to come along.
You're going to win erotic books.
I don't know if O'Reilly do erotic books, particularly with animals on the front cover. There's something
well, for geeks, it's erotic.
About. There's nothing erotic about Pearl.
No,
I've never said
at all.
That before.
Python, maybe.
I think we need to stop this conversation.
So who are some of the speakers you got coming over?
Oh, we got a bunch of them. So for example, Miguel de Casa, who was the co-founder of GNOME, he's going to be speaking. We've also got Val Henson, who's a prominent kernel developer, speaking. I'm just going to bring up the list because I can never remember. So we've got Miguel de Casa, Ian Murdoch, Jeremy Allison, Robert Love, Christopher Blizzard, Denise Cooper, Ben Collins, Val Henson, Alison Randall, John Buckman, Aza Raskin, Christian Hammond, Matty Garrett, Benjamin Mako Hill, Kristen Accardi, Ian McKellar, Dan Cagle, Aaron Buckover, Eddie Muliano, Matthew Walster, Belinda Lopez, Joe Bourne, Mike Linksaver, Stuart Smith, Joe Zonka Brockmeyer, Brian Will, Selena Deckelman, David Huffman, David Schlieff, and Emma Jane Hogbin, Ilan Rabanovich, and Jason Cridner.
So never heard of them.
Friends.
Got a good group of people there, and we're really pleased as well to see a lot of women involved in speaking as well, because typically a lot of these conferences are pretty devoid of women speakers. So
yes,
Sausage Fest City,
and women attendees too.
Yeah, well that's it. Well, look, one of the speakers on here is called Emma Jane Hogbin, and she runs this conference up in Canada called HICTEC, and she has an unusually high number of women attend her conference. So we were kind of comparing notes and ideas, and Emma gave a few thoughts and ideas.
Mark
to help
that one on the calendar, won't we?
So, so I'm looking forward to Lug Radio Live. Hopefully, setting some standards in terms of broadening more women to come into open source as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, because there's a half a population there that we need to also get interested in open source, you know, if we're to start making dents, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's shaping up to be pretty good, so hopefully I'll get to meet a load of your loyal fans at Lug Radio Live.
Both of them. Now, is the whole Lug Radio team going to Lug Radio Live US?
Sorry, what was that?
Is the whole Lug Radio team going to Lug Radio Live US?
Yep, all four of us are going to be going. And we're also bringing over one of our loyal listeners who's going to be videoing the whole thing. And then, of course, our huge entourage of staff and personal beauticians as well that we never travel without.
So you guys got a lot of, you do a lot. And, you know, you work for Ubuntu, so I would assume that you have...
You work for Canonical, who sponsors Ubuntu.
Yes, Canonical. But on the same token, the other Lug Radio guys don't work for Canonical. That must put a lot of pressure on them. Or no, they must take up a lot of their personal time and personal vacation to contribute to being able to do this, and that's pretty wild.
I mean, it's kind of, as you guys will know, I mean, doing something like a podcast and trying to keep it interesting is hard work. And I mean, I work at Canonical, but none of my work time is dedicated to Lug Radio. Everything, I'm in the same boat as everybody else. You know, I do all of this in my spare time. But, you know, we're five seasons in now. I mean, we're coming up to our 100th show. It's become a lot more work because we've wanted Lug Radio to really become something that everybody can have and everybody can feel a part of, in the same way that you guys do with your listeners as well. You try to involve people. And that can take a huge amount of effort and work. But we've also tried to develop more of an image and more of a kind of a cult side to the show in season five. So you've probably seen some of the what people are referring to as boy band pictures that we did, where we went out and took some photos and we redesigned the website and all that kind of stuff. But we love doing it. I mean, we absolutely, the four of us, such a good time. And when we, recording a show in an evening is just, you know, it's like a ritual. You know, everybody comes around and we have such a good time. And there's much fun in between the recordings that happens in the show. And we're really pleased with the two new guys who've come on board since Matt and Aid have left. They seem to be enjoying it and doing a good time as well.
Now, you guys are on your fifth season, right?
Yeah.
And so you and who's left over from the original crew? You and
so Ben? Me and Ag.
I'm sorry. And so the two new guys. Now, are you committed to sticking it out all the way?
Yeah.
For the long haul?
I'm pleased to say that I'm the only person who's been in every single show. But part of the reason for that is that it's recorded in my house. So it's difficult for me to not be in every show. And if there's one group of people I'm never going to give my door key to, it's going to be them. you know, they've been setting... So as a typical example, every time, you know, we record in my little home studio, and I sit next to the computer and drive the mixing desk. And when I nip off to go for a pee or something, every single time they set the homepage in Firefox to Meatspin. every single time. And that's all right. It's funny, you know, the first 500 times. But then when your mum and dad come and visit and you want to show them in Firefox and you load Firefox and they're confronted with that, it's less funny. So,
blame Dan.
Yeah, that was interesting. But
it's all Dan's fault.
It's, but Ak and I have been, we've been there from the beginning, and then Matt was there from the beginning, and Matt left about six, well, probably nearly a year ago now.
Yeah, so I was going to say a year ago, right, yeah.
Yeah, and then Aid left shortly after that, and Chris came in. Adam was always a natural choice to replace whoever left next, because Adam was always our resident stand-in and been involved in the show since day one. But Chris was a new choice, so...
So you get all four of you guys to show up to do the show on a regular basis. You do it every fortnight, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you're on your fifth season. Do you ever just say, like, oh, I'm sick of doing it? Or is it too much of a party?
I think it really is too much of a party. I mean, it's... I remember around season two, season three, I think it was probably season three, I went through a bit of a patch of getting a bit, I wasn't particularly feeling as particularly creative with it as I used to, and then it just all came flooding back. But it's typically when you feel like you're about to burn out. I mean, I feel like I'm going to burn out about once every 8 months, and everything just piles up, you know. And particularly since I started working at Canonical, where the sheer level of work, the sheer amount of stuff to do at Canonical and with Ubuntu is just insane. You can sometimes feel like you're about to burn out, and sometimes Lug Radio has felt in the past a bit like, you want to be creative, you want to get in there, you want to switch the tape recorder on, you want to be having a laugh and cracking loads of jokes. But I can honestly say for the last two years or whatever, I've never had that happen to me once since. It's only been really one time, that was a couple of years ago when I was feeling a bit burnt out. But
I'll tell you what, certainly none of us would know anything about feeling burnout. You know?
it's pretty nuts. And the thing is, as well, is that it's we're all such good friends as well. I mean, you guys are probably exactly the same. You know, we're really close mates, and particularly Ak and I. I mean, I've known Ak for a long time, and Ak and I are like, you know, we literally chat to each other two or three times every day to talk about stuff, because we've always got something on the go. So right now it's Lug Radio Live, and we end up talking two or three times every day. We're like the odd couple in some ways. it's good fun.
I got a question for you. How do you differentiate between seasons? Is there a certain amount of episodes, or?
Basically, we have a very short summer break. Where we basically take the summer break after Lug Radio Live in the UK. So Lug Radio Live in the UK is usually on in July. And this year it's on the, I think it's the 19th and 20th of July in England. And that show is typically our last show of the season. And then we start up again, usually around September. So a season is generally around 20-odd episodes, something like that. The idea of doing seasons was back in season one, we were all really hectic and we decided, you know, we thought it might be a good idea to take a little bit of time out. And this was shortly before Sparks decided to leave the show as well. So part of it was kind of giving a bit of time to make sure Sparks was happy with things. And we just think it's quite handy. It gives you some time off to collate a big list of ideas for when you get back into the season. And we typically go out and eat a big Chinese meal and then write a big list of ideas in our wiki.
So it sounds like you guys do some actual, like, preparation for each episode.
I wouldn't be that presumptuous. When we started doing the show, it was very much, we very much were of the viewpoint that Lug Radio was designed to be something that we thought would be interesting. And if people listen to it, that'd be cool. But if no one listened to it, then we'd just keep going. And if we got bored, we'd get bored. And the idea was that we thought we were doing something a little different, and we became a little bit kind of close-sighted in this regard. And we thought, well, the kind of people who listen to Le Gradio are the kind of people that we get on with. You know, the kind of people who are good fun, very social, interested in technology, but can switch off and have a good time as well. And so back in the early days, we deliberately didn't do any research, and we deliberately didn't do any preparation because we wanted it to sound quite anarchic and raw. But in as time's gone on, we enjoy doing more researchy type stuff. So to the point where we even sometimes meet up on Saturdays to record stuff, which is incredible amounts of preparation. So, but generally, with season five particularly, we've tried to have a lot more. We've tried to make it a little bit more technical and have a bit more grounding in some of the segments we did, because some of the segments we did in the past were it'd be cool to talk about this, and we didn't actually know anything about it, and we just opined for a little while, and we're trying to be a bit more organized and a bit more interesting as we go along.
So, one of the things that people notice, and I've heard people notice right away, regarding Lug Radio, in you had mentioned about it being a bunch of guys hanging out and pontificating on subjects, is also the language that you use has been, to American or United States, people in the United States have often deemed it very raw. Has that been an issue for a lot of criticism towards Lug Radio? And, I mean, what's your guys' take on that?
Yeah, I mean, when we started doing it, we didn't want to not swear and use bad language, because to us that's part of social chit-chat. You know, if you go into any pub in England, there will be people using bad language. And we were very keen that Lug Radio was going to be the four of us in raw form. But we were also conscious to not offend too many people. So originally we replaced it with, we replaced the bad language with animal noises, which was very funny for a long time. And, but then I got sick of editing it, so we just thought, you know what, sort of it, we'll just use the bad language. And again, this kind of comes back to what you could maybe perceive as being a little bit arrogant at first, which was we figured if people complain about the show, about the language, we don't want them listening to the show anyway. You know, if you don't like what we're doing, piss off. It's the kind of perspective that we had. And it's because we were of the view that the kind of people who listen to Lug Radio are the kind of people that we'd like. And it was a little bit of an issue back in season one, but since then, no one complains about it. I mean, occasionally people say, oh, it'd be nice if there wasn't bad language in there. But it's very rare. I think people accept that there's some bad language in there, but it's part of the way we are. And it's actually, we swear a lot less than we used to. And one word is absolutely censored. We never have that word in the show.
What word is that?
I couldn't possibly say.
Does it rhyme with punt?
Yes.
Now, Lug Radio has been extremely popular across the globe, given that Lug Radio Live has been extremely successful year after year, and you're doing Lug Radio USA coming up, and that's building up a whole lot of momentum. Do you feel that Lug Radio has become such an entity onto itself that you feel compelled to keep going with it and difficult to consider even stopping it because so many people would be sort of depending upon you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's important to get things in perspective. I mean, Lug Radio's been successful and we're pleased with it, but it's not the be-all, end-all by any stretch of the imagination. It's just something that we enjoy doing and some slightly deranged people enjoy listening to. But it's there's definitely a pressure there because it's become much more than, you know, the four of us. It's become, we've got this whole community out there who are very passionate about the show, contribute an awful lot to it. And Lug Radio Live is an incredible testament to that. I mean, the one thing I'll never forget was doing Lug Radio Live last year, and we weren't allowed to get into the venue until the morning of the event, and the doors opened at 10 o'clock. So we were allowed into the venue at 7 o'clock, and we had to get all of the exhibitors, all the equipment, everything set up in literally 2 hours, 2 or 3 hours. And we had 12 crew members who were Lug Radio listeners who volunteered to come along, and they were all down there on the Friday night. We all got drunk, and then we all got up very early on the Saturday morning. And we gave them all these bright yellow T-shirts with crew written on the back. And literally, I've never seen such an inspiring sight of when we had these 12 people who were passionate about the show. And then they all just literally scattered across the venue and started constructing it. And within literally an hour or an hour and a half, all the stages were set up, all the video stuff was set up, the audio equipment was set up, all the exhibition area, the bags were filled with stuff. It was really remarkable. And it kind of makes you realize just... It's really inspiring to see people enjoying it and getting involved and digging in. But there's also a pressure to make sure that you try and make the show as good as possible for people, so people can enjoy it. And I've certainly felt the pressure because I live in the centre of England, and round here, I'll be honest with you, where I live is not the best place to live. It's fairly basic. And when I've spent a lot of time travelling, and when travelling, I thought to myself, you know what? There's more to life than living where I live, and I thought about moving, and I thought about moving away, but if I moved away, then Lug Radio would stop. So I haven't moved yet, because I liked it in Lug Radio. So I'm reluctant to kind of... It's things like that, when you consider other things, it kind of plays a part, but it's no different to someone who's in a band, and they don't want to move because they don't want to leave their band, or if they're in amateur dramatic society or something, you know. It's the thing that I like to do.
So you guys are videotaping Lug Radio Live USA. Will you be streaming any of the presentations live?
We're not going to do any live streaming. Part of that is technical reasons. I mean, we could theoretically do it if we wanted to. But the main thing is that we want people to come. But we are going to be videoing as much of it as possible. I had a couple of hour conference call earlier on this evening with Google, with the other guys, and we're going to try and get as much of the show videoed as possible, and the live recording will definitely be videoed as well. So hopefully we can have a load of content. But traditionally, Lug Radio Live has been videoed, and then we've not done a very good job of getting it out there. But we've got Tony Whitmore, who's helping out. He's going to be managing the video side of things, so we have a lot more confidence about that we're flying him out and he's looking after it.
You know, if you do move, all you need to do is get an asterisk box going, and you still can do the show from all over the world and not miss a beat.
Theoretically, I think you can do that, but the one thing we've discovered is that when we record a show, an awful lot happens in mime. When we record a show, there's an awful lot of looking at each other and making hand signals and hand gestures and hitting each other with drumsticks, you know, particularly in interviews, that I think we'd lose it. I mean, for one of us to be away from it, it wouldn't be too bad, but for the rest of us, I think it would be a problem. But I'm quite happy living where I'm living. It's not an issue. It's just when considering options. But I'm very, very reluctant to stop doing Lug Radio, which I'm sure all of the Lug Radio fans will be pissed off about, because I'm sure they prefer somebody else to be in the hot seat.
Now, your work at Canonical, did you acquire that job there, the position there, due to Lug Radio? I mean, was Lug Radio one of the factors, or was it largely your contributions through your writing for various magazines that made you more appealing to them?
Lug Radio played a part, because I know Mark Shuttleworth listens to the show. Oh, he used to listen to it back then. I don't know if he listens to it anymore. He was aware of the show. And the job, I heard about the job when I was speaking to him and just sort of saying, you know, is there anything going at Canonical? Because where I was working, things were kind of coming to an end because it was a funded project and I was an open source advocate. All funded projects end, and I wanted to make sure I had something lined up. So I went and started interviewing, and 4 interviews later I got the job. It's funny because when he first mentioned the job to me, he said, oh, there's this job called Ubuntu Community Manager, but, you know, I don't think it's for you. I'm pleased it worked out the way it worked out.
So I think we briefly covered this the last time you were on in between disgusting video clips. But what exactly does the community manager do aside from herding cats? I mean, you've been in this position now for a year, 2 years? 2 years now?
About a year and a half.
A year and a half. And yeah. What have you learned from this position, and what have you contributed to the Ubuntu phenomena?
I mean, it's weird. It's people always ask this, you know, what is it exactly that you do for a job? And it's odd because to me it seems fairly obvious, is that to me the role of a community manager is to essentially help that community be as efficient and as productive and as happy as possible. The aim of the game here is to make sure that everybody in that community is having a good time and doing some good work, not treading on each other's feet, being productive, all of these bits and pieces. It's kind of like being a manager in a company. You know, a company manager is there to help make sure that the company's running efficiently and that people are happy. And it kind of spans out into so many different areas. I mean, the diversity in community work is incredible. You know, on a typical day, you'll be setting up governance infrastructure, you know, setting up council, writing codification structures. Then they'll be dealing with conflict resolution, helping different teams to run efficiently, writing processes, outreach, promoting Ubuntu in different ways, doing talks at conferences, liaising with the company in terms of work with commercial organizations. It really is a jack of all trades of when it comes to contributors to Ubuntu. And that's one of the things I really enjoy about the job, is that it's incredibly varied. And what's changed since I last spoke to you guys is I now have a team at Canonical. When I spoke to you guys, it was just me doing the community stuff, but I've now got two guys who work for me at Canonical as well. So there's three of us to spread the workload around, but it's a huge amount of work, but it's incredible fun as well.
So what's coming up in the new release to look forward to? It's right around the corner.
In Hardy,
I'm
bizarrely, well, I'm not the best person to speak to. I mean, there's loads of cool stuff going in there. I mean, there's you know, updates to loads of different pieces of software in there. We're seeing some new look and feel stuff going in there. Some new installer work has gone in there. There's a lot of work gone into Ubuntu Server. Ubuntu Server's got an excellent release coming up. And because this is an LTS release as well, it's incredibly stable as well. A lot of bug fixing work has gone on, which has been important. It's a pretty good, solid release. I mean, I've been running it for a while now, and I'm quite happy with the way things are working. But the best thing to do is to get over to Ubuntu.com and check out the release notes when it's out. We're just in the process of kind of finalizing bits and pieces in there at the moment, and making sure it's as rock solid as possible. And the beta is going to be coming out, and we're going to be doing a lot of testing. In terms of feature development and what features go into Ubuntu, I have very little involvement. I mean, I can recommend and suggest and all the rest of it, but much of my work doesn't actually involve feature development. It's actually the community around it that's doing feature development.
Speaking of the community around it, you guys had a whole bunch of webinars recently, didn't you? Where you gave IRC classes and chats,
yeah,
so people
yeah.
join in and learn different things, such as packaging and other things.
Yeah, we call that Ubuntu Developer Week. Every time when we release a version of Ubuntu, we run Ubuntu Open Week, and that's a bunch of sessions about how to contribute to Ubuntu. And we decided we wanted to do something more specifically to software development and packaging. So we did Ubuntu Open Week, and it was a great success. It was a lot of fun. A lot of people attended, and we've had a bunch of new developers join up and get involved. It's just a load of IRC tutorial sessions, and our community are great contributors in terms of helping to run the sessions, and we've had an increased focus on getting people involved in packaging in Ubuntu, and it's great to see things like this kind of bearing some fruit. I think these kinds of things are good because they're more structured. People can get along, and there's an event that they can attend, and they can ask questions and get them started with Ubuntu as easy as possible.
We have a question in from the chat from Greg H. about what's up with Landscape for Ubuntu Server.
What do you mean by what's up? I think, what's it about?
Possibly. I just quoted him verbatim. But yeah, is Landscape and what's it about?
Landscape is basically a tool for managing Ubuntu systems, and it's not something I've particularly spent much time using because it really doesn't fall under my remit. I mean, it's something that other people tend to use, but it's something that we offer as part of our as part of Canonical support offering, and it hooks directly into Ubuntu. And it's got like an easy web interface to the various system management functionality. So it's pretty cool. You have to check it out.
Because Canonical's making a really big push into the server space, which is quite an important area to get into. It's pretty competitive to get into it. And that's where like Red Hat's bread and butter is, you know, the server space, the corporate server space. And, all their source code is available for free. I mean, the CentOS guys, you know, they basically just took out all the branding, and it's basically, you know, Red Hat. That makes, you know, people get the Red Hat subscriptions is the value added by it. I guess that's what Canonical is trying to do with the server release, trying to give it a little more management tools and a little extra.
Yeah, I mean, it is a competitive market, and there's a lot of people working in that area and trying to make some headway. We kind of believe that Ubuntu is an ethos. It's an approach, and trying to take that ethos and that approach to different areas. So, you know, the most noticeable area is, of course, the desktop. But we're focusing a lot of effort and resources on the server and also on mobile and mobile devices as well. So we've seen Ubuntu Mobile getting a lot of work as well. We're still newcomers to the game. We're still very new to it. Red Hat have got a long history behind them of focusing on this area. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us, but I think we're making some really good progress, and we've got an incredibly solid server team working on it. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's going on and where we move forward with it.
Now, speaking of Ubuntu on various devices, I mean, it must be really cool that Dell comes out and selects Ubuntu, and Ubuntu has this big fanfare behind it. It's probably the most popular distribution of Linux right now, heralded as the desktop Linux of choice for the majority of people, and it's got such momentum behind it. And then, and I would assume that Canonical or somebody is doing usability testing with Ubuntu and the various projects and stuff, and it's all coming together really nice. And then a company like Everex puts out the GPC with Ubuntu as the core, but running something like Enlightenment 17, which, you know, kind of is off-putting to the audience, I think, that they're trying to cater to. And also, you know, you got this wonderful device, the Triple EPC comes out, but it's not running Ubuntu, which it should be. What the hell, Jono?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that the market kind of like moves in different ways, and people strike deals with people in many different areas, you know. And the thing is that with any company, no matter how much headway you're making, you don't get all of the deal. You don't always strike all of the right numbers. And And sometimes you can focus on some deals and some agreements, and you focus on other agreements, and sometimes things can take you by surprise in terms of their success. The TripEPC, I think, has taken everybody by surprise. I mean, it's sold a huge, huge amount of units. It's an incredible, incredible little box. And yeah, I mean, we openly, you know, we wish we'd been able to have that opportunity available to us. But I think that as time goes on, you know, the thing that people forget about Canonical is that we're a small company. You know, people think that Mark has got all of this money and therefore we have unlimited funds. It really isn't the case. You know, we've got budgets. We've got, you know, it's not an endless pit of money that we've got. And we have to get results. You know, everybody in the company has got expectations on them to deliver in their particular area. And consequently, when assessing new business opportunities, you know, there's various things you need to take into account, and sometimes you focus your resources on these things, but you don't focus your resources on other things. And sometimes things come along and they really take you by surprise, something like the TripEPC. TripEPC has really kicked off a whole sub-notebook revolution, I think. It's really focusing people on sub-notebook, and it's very exciting. And to be fair as well, the Zandros guys did a phenomenal job there. I mean, it's an excellent, excellent software implementation. It's a really, really solid little machine. But I'd like to think that the next version of the TripEPC will have Ubuntu running on it.
Speaking of laptops, you recently got a new laptop. You got the Dell XPS 1330, right?
Oh, it's sat on my lap right now.
How do you like it?
It's awesome. It really is.
That seems to be the hot laptop.
Oh, it's stunning. It's brilliant. The only criticism I have is that the keyboard feels a tiny little bit plasticky, but it's fine. Other than that, it's fantastic. And it's unfortunately, I ordered it like a week before the Ubuntu installation was announced on the 1330. So I got mine with Vista on it, which never got booted. I just installed Ubuntu straight away. But it's a really nice machine. Everything works great in it. The SD card reader works. The fingerprint reader works. All the graphics, all the video works. The sound, Bluetooth. I got the Intel chipset one, and it's working great.
You can run Compass on that?
Unfortunately, with the one thing that's tricky is Compass, and the reason for that is that. Even though the machine's got Intel graphics, integrated graphics in it, basically, from what I've heard, the Intel developers wanted to make some changes to X.org to make this graphics driver work effectively. But some of those things haven't landed in X yet, so they've not put it in the driver yet. So basically, they're waiting for these things to land in X, and then they can fix the driver so Compass will work properly. Because basically, if you have Compass running, you can't run video. And if you run video, you can't run Compass. So I watch a reasonable amount of video on my machines, and I'm less bothered about Compass. So I decided to have Compass switched off.
What kind of video cards in there?
I can't remember the specific model, but it's basically
It's the Intel 3100.
And that can't do Compass and video at the same time?
With that particular driver, no.
With that what? Sorry.
Yeah, with the current driver. It can't do Compass. It can do it, but you've got to essentially, from what I can tell, and I'm running on low information here. Basically, the card is blacklisted because it can't run Compass and video at the same time. If you just want to run Compass and you don't run any video, then it's fine. You know, like when Compass first came out, everyone had video problems with it, and it's the same sort of thing. But the fact that it's it's from Intel suggests that it will be fixed.
Now, see, I know because I run Compass Fusion on my workstation at work, which has an Intel card in it that was blacklisted. So I unblacklisted it in my system, and I did have problems with video first until I changed GStreamer, MPlayer, and all the other ones to use OpenGL for video.
Right.
And then I changed them back for something else. But I did have to go through a little bit of hoops to get it working properly. Mm. But now it works like a top.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I reckon it should be, I imagine it'll be fixed fairly soon. I mean, the reason why I went with Intel is that I want to have a complete free software laptop. So
you should flex your canonical muscles and reach across the ocean and slap Intel and get them moving. They would respect you.
I could try.
How's the heat on that laptop after using it for like an hour or two?
It's fine. I tend to have two positions when working. I'm either sat in front of my desk or I'm sat as I am now. I'm in my office right now. I'm in my chair and I'm leaned back. I've got my feet on the desk and I've got the laptop on my knees. And this laptop's been on all day and it doesn't feel hot at all.
Yeah, that laptop and the ThinkPad T61 I've been looking at, and I'm kind of leaning towards the Dell.
It's brilliant. It really is. I mean, when I was in a previous job, because we were government funded, we had a lot of money we had to spend. If you didn't spend it, you didn't get any more money. So we went through an awful lot of laptops, and any time a new laptop came out, basically I got one as part of my job there. So I tested a lot of VIOS, ThinkPads, Toshes, various laptops, and this is, without a shadow of a doubt, the nicest laptop I've ever used. It really is. I know I sound like I'm on commission for Dell, but it's really nice.
Yeah, I was very happy to hear that they opened up the Ubuntu offerings with that model. It's a really nice machine.
Yeah, no, I'm pleased as well. It's a cool little looking machine as well. It doesn't look ugly. I mean, I like the ThinkPads, but they look ugly. I mean, it looks like something from, a 1980s sci-fi film. Whereas this is like a nice, it's a cute little machine as well, which is good.
Now, speaking of the Ubuntu community, who was instrumental in creating the Ubuntu Loco teams? Was that you?
No, the Loco teams existed before me. I'm not sure who came up with the idea of Loco teams. It was probably Mako. But when I joined Canonical, I was kind of looking at things. When I joined Canonical, I had no specific things I had to work on. They're basically, my first day at work, I basically just had to figure out what I wanted to work on and then start working on it. And the thing that I really wanted to focus on was Loco teams, because to me, Loco teams offer a huge backbone to the rest of the project. It's a big network of Ubuntu enthusiasts connected by a concept, which is the Loco concept.
The growth there has been
stunning. I mean, we've got over 160 teams all over the world now. We're really pleased with the growth there.
Now, in the past, there was a lot of emphasis on creating lugs. So why did Ubuntu elect to go with Loco teams instead of encouraging lugs?
I think the reason for that is because lugs are essentially vendor independent. If you go to any typical lug, you'll have people who use Ubuntu or Fedora or Red Hat or Slackware or Debian or whatever. The strength behind lugs is the diversity of people that are there. Whereas the only people who can join a Loco team are people who are interested in Ubuntu or Kubuntu or Edubuntu or one of the Ubuntu derivatives. If you're a Fedora user, it's unlikely you're going to join an Ubuntu Loco team. it just doesn't make sense. And the idea is that Loco teams are not there to replace lugs. They're there to complement lugs in many ways. They're as just groups of Ubuntu enthusiasts who are connected, who can help spread the Ubuntu love. And some of these Locos do some absolutely incredible work all over the world. And I absolutely love that. One of the great things about traveling is that I get to meet a lot of the Loco team. And some of them do some stunning work in all over the world. So it's very different to lugs in that regard. Lugs are very much for people of various backgrounds to come together, and Ubuntu is very much a specific advocacy effort for the local teams.
Now, Ubuntu has its Ubuntu conference, right, during the summertime?
There's Ubuntu Live, which is the kind of the businessy type conference. But we also have the Ubuntu Developer Summit, which is where we actually flesh out the next version of Ubuntu. And the next one of those is going to be in May in Prague.
Oh, nice place to have it.
Yeah, it's cool. That's what I enjoy about one of the nice things about the Ubuntu Developer Summits is that we alternate between the US and Europe. And it's a different place every time, so it's always nice to go and visit these places. So I'm looking forward to going to Prague. It sounds like a very cool place to visit.
I hear it's a very pretty city to go see.
Sorry?
I hear it's a very nice city.
Yeah, I mean, we were in Seville as well about a year ago, and that was an incredibly beautiful city to visit as well.
That's a nice place, too.
And Boston was the last one. That was cool.
What's the one in Portland? Is that the Ubuntu Live?
Yeah, Ubuntu Live. Ubuntu Live is very much a typical kind of conference with talks and exhibitors and that kind of stuff. And we did the first one last year, and it was great. So we're doing it again this year. Looking forward to it. And that's going to be at the big conference center in Portland.
So you get to go to all the conferences that Ubuntu has. Are you expected to go?
I'm expected to go to the developer summits. I also go to sprints, which are just individual teams who meet up and people who meet up and work on something in particular. So we had we've had sprints for compis and we've had sprints for hardware enablement and that kind of stuff. Ubuntu Live is generally something I attend, although Ubuntu Live is right before Lug Radio Live in the UK, so I'm probably going to have to fly literally the day after Lug Radio Live, fly out to Portland for Ubuntu Live.
Awesome. Why don't you guys do anything on the freaking East Coast? Like, Virginia Beach is beautiful.
Nothing seems to happen on the East Coast in terms of events. I've noticed this. If we do Lug Radio Live next year, we're probably going to do it in New York.
That's a good place. New York, D.C., Philly, Boston, any of those places work for us.
Virginia Beach, baby. Virginia Beach.
Because I do like the idea of doing, if Lug Radio Live is a success this year in the U.S., then we'll do it again next year, I think. The level of work required for a U.S. event is surprises all. Cool to do.
Why don't you guys pop in October to the Ohio Linux Fest,
and we
could all hang around together and just take the entire city over,
That'd be cool if we could. What I'd love to do, right, I'd love to get you guys, the Linux Action Show guys, and us together. And I'd like us to have a photo, everybody. Because, there's this friendly banter between the three different shows. And, and then you've got the new Linux Outlaws dudes as well. But I'd love to get, Ak and I talked about this quite a lot. We'd love to get everybody together to meet up. Because I've met the Linux Action Show guys, met them at Ubuntu Live. I haven't met you guys yet. But it'd be great to get everybody together and, maybe we should organize a Linux podcast conference.
Then it would end up on, the West Coast or in Japan. And, everybody that we know would be on the East Coast.
I think, yeah. Yeah. At least it's in the same country. I mean, we'd have to travel to the U.S.
That's true.
But, Ohio Linux Fest would be good to get. I'm going to definitely get out there. It'd be good to kind of organize us all to meet up. I'll have to see if I can get the other guys out there as well. But luckily, I can go out there as part of my job, whereas the other guys have to pay their own way. So maybe if someone can sponsor us, then we can send those guys out as well.
Now, if you come to OLF, Ohio Linux Fest, Jeremy Garcia will be there.
Hey, wicked. He's going to be at Lug Radio Live as well. So
he's dead to me, so I don't care.
You're hurt by him, aren't you?
Oh, no, he's a good guy. He's actually a great guy. He is.
Yeah, he's cool.
I'm sorry, Pat. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, speaking of Ohio Linux Fest, I was going to talk to you guys about it. I was thinking of maybe maybe submitting a paper to maybe do a live Linux podcasting talk where we could actually do a show live as part of the talk.
What's that have to do with Chano?
Well, if he's going to be there, he could participate.
Oh, okay.
I'll check it out. Yeah, bring it on.
You want to fight?
I'd like a fight.
All right.
Like a knife fight.
You going to bring a knife fight to a gunfight?
Oh, I forgot this is in America, isn't it?
That's right.
Here in the UK, you know, it's hand-to-hand combat. Over there, guns.
That's right.
A weak weapon.
That's it. We're a bunch of cowards. But if you really want to have a knife fight, well, we'll set that up. We have a bunch of listeners that would jump in to be shields.
I think you're expecting a lot of your listeners.
In fact, one of our listeners is ecstatic to see you guys. He won a shirt from you for his email on the brown note. And he wants to know if you guys need any fluffers for Lug Radio Live USA.
Of course, yeah. Is that Gorkum?
Yes.
Yes, he would definitely. Like to be fluffers your fluffer. I think we need to have a fluffer at Lug Radio Live.
There you go.
Yep. Bring it on, Gorkum, and wear the T-shirt. That will make us all very happy.
We'll box them up for you and send them out.
Yeah, it's the T-shirt seems to have gone down quite well. We're sending T-shirts out to people who are sending the best letters, emails to the show. And there's like custom T-shirts that we're giving out as prizes. So they're quite cool T-shirts because we've got a designer now who actually can draw. You know, in the past it was us and everything was horrible. So it's quite cool.
You're also giving away the finger of God.
I know.
How could you give away that treasure?
It is a treasure. Yeah, we were trying to think of an amusing competition to because we had the Pin My Lug Radio competition where people could send in promotional material that we could use to pimp the show. And we had some absolutely hilarious entries. If you go to lugradio.org/pimpmylugradio, you can see them. So we were trying to think of a replacement competition and... We came up with this ridiculous idea based around Aza Raskin, who's a usability expert, who always wears this rather trendy hat for people to send in their hat suggestions for Aza Raskin. And it's absolutely ridiculous. And we invented this whole premise that he'd been visiting some mountains in Fiji and then fallen over and lost his hat, and we need the listeners to send in a replacement hat. It's all a bit mental. But it was, so we've had some extremely amusing hat entries suggested, and we're going to try and get one of these hats made up for Lug Radio Live and present it to Aza at the show.
One more question, Jono. How do you like KDE 4.0?
I think it's cool. I think I tested it. We did a review of it for the show. But it's pretty good. It's got some little rough edges around the edge which need to be knocked off, like they've accepted. But I think the KDE team have done a pretty stunning job with that. And I find any project that can kind of step forward and define a new way of doing things and bring everybody together to do it is pretty cool.
They finally fixed
KDE 4.1.
The panel resizer, they finally included that. On the left,
yeah, they added that
patches.
Into 4.0.2 or something. I think it's good. I mean, it's like any first release. It's got some things in there that you think, well, why does it do it like that? But I think that the broad kind of approach that they're taking is interesting, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it develops. But like I say, I think KDE 4.1 is going to be the really interesting release when they bring that out, and they've knocked off all the rough edges. So it's credit where credit's due to the team. They've done a pretty good job, I think.
Well, what do you think of Aaron Saigo's whole notion that the open source model is completely different than what people are used to with commercial proprietary software releases? The whole beta issue. Do you really think it doesn't apply to open source projects?
I don't know. I think there's a lot of similarities. I mean, I think software needs to be tested. You know, you need the thing is that every software project, whether it's commercial or whether it's free software, needs a good solid release, a release map, and a roadmap. And people need to sit down and identify what you know, what they want to achieve, and then figure out who needs to do it and who needs to kind of achieve what they want to do. And it I don't know. I think that you need to have a good beta testing period. You need to have time for people to include it in distributions and people to test it. And you need to have bugs being reported in the distributions and then being forwarded upstream and all the rest of it. Aaron's got some really interesting approaches to things. I mean, I really have a lot of respect for him. I've known him for a few years, and I've known him for probably about 7 years now, and he's a really good guy. But some of his viewpoints I do disagree with. And it would be wrong for me to express why I disagree with him without him being here, so he can't defend himself. But I think he's a very talented developer. But I find some of his perspectives at times... I remember he wrote something about how he didn't believe that multi-platform open source software was a good thing. I think I might be imagining this, but I seem to remember him saying that he felt like we shouldn't make open source software available for Windows because that stops people coming to Linux. And to me, that's a bit short-sighted. It's kind of, the idea is free software for everybody. And I don't believe in forcing free software down. I don't believe in limiting the options so people go in one direction or another. We should allow people to make their own choices. So if we can have software, free software for Windows, that's great. But naturally, we need to make sure that systems such as Ubuntu are as intriguing as possible that people move.
Are you guys pleased with the adoption of Ubuntu and how well it's going?
It's taken everybody by surprise. We're really pleased with it. I mean, people, there's a lot of mindshare out there with Ubuntu. A lot of people are interested in it. A lot of people are using it. A lot of people are talking about it. And I really do genuinely feel that we can make a difference. Not just, you know, everybody in the Linux world gets a little too wrapped up in their own little world. You know, we all live in this little fishbowl, and we have our little celebrities that are out there making lots of noise about stuff and who are very well known in our little fishbowl. And it's tempting for us to kind of get a little wrapped up in the celebrity and the closeness of that. But there's this whole big world out there where Ubuntu is a drop in the ocean. And I really do genuinely believe that we can make a huge difference with Ubuntu in that world. I think, you know, once we get out the fishbowl and we're out there and we're making waves, I think we can really make a hell of a difference and really change the economics of the IT world. And I think Ubuntu has got us off to a really good start. But the mountain is steep, and we've got an awful lot of work ahead of us. The thing that I'm pleased about is that I think we have some really smart people and some really motivated people to help us get there. So I'm really pleased with what we've got. But I think the future is an exciting place to be for Ubuntu.
Let me ask your opinion on something.
Sure.
What do you think is the bigger competitor to Linux in the in the long run? Is it Windows or OS X?
Right. I'd say it's easily Windows. OS X is a competitor, but OS X is fractional compared to the amount of Windows use. I mean, you know... OS X is more directly competitive in the fact that it's based on Unix. It targets more of a niche, enthusiastic type of contributor. But the kind of people who use Mac OS X are Mac addicts. You know, I mean, yes, there's a lot of designers out there who are using it, but a lot of designers are using Windows now as well, because Windows has really shaped its game up when it comes to design kind of web. But the kind of people who use Mac OS X are Mac fanatics. In the same way that a lot of people who use Ubuntu are Ubuntu fanatics. Whereas a lot of people who use Windows are just regular people who don't care one way or another about software. And to me, Windows is the ubiquitous, established you know, entity that we need to take on. And that's the game that we're going for. But I think part of this game is understanding what the competition is out there, and part of it is also developing your own identity and developing your own way of doing things. And some distributors have gone out to essentially replicate Windows in free software form. I mean, Zandros has done that extensively. Linspire have done that to a reasonable degree. They've replicated the look and feel to a large degree of how Windows works. And to me, that's kind of like, that's the wrong approach to take. You know, you need to define your own way of working, your own identity. And our identity and way of working is GNOME in Ubuntu and KDE in Ubuntu.
That's a guy. I liked your answer there. That's pretty good. Thank you.
No worries.
Now you say that we look at in the Linux community, Ubuntu as this big phenomenon, yet it's a drop in the bucket compared to the rest of the world. But being a world traveler that you are you seeing a shift in the market that, Linux, not just Ubuntu, but Linux in general, is gaining a larger foothold?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, kind of the way I tend to approach this, and what I used to say in my talks, this particular talk that I used to take around, was that the growth that we've seen in the Linux world, just general Linux world, in the last 10 years has been so incredibly quick compared to other operating systems. So, I mean, when I got involved, it was 1998, and back then it took 2.5 weeks to install Linux on my computer. It was incredibly basic in terms of nothing worked, nothing was automated, everything you needed a degree in rocket science to make the damn thing work. And now, you know, nowadays you can stick a CD in the drive and it just works. And the progress that's been made in those 10 years in terms of, you know, like literally 10 years ago, there was barely any application. You had lots of very powerful utilities, but you didn't have many applications. And just look at all the applications that have been developed and the desktop environments that have been developed and the games and everything. You know, it's incredible. And I see Linux becoming more and more relevant everywhere. I mean, it's like nowadays, so a good example is I live in central England, and I'm 2 hours away from London. And I go down to London at least once every couple of weeks to go and visit the office and do some work at the office. And when I go down to London, I get the train. And now when I get the train, I've seen Linux being used on people's laptops. I've seen people sat there with Ubuntu on their laptops. Whereas, you know, a couple of years ago, it was only ever Windows. You know, you see Linux being on the front cover of general purpose computer magazines. I've seen it mentioned on TV. I've seen it mentioned on the radio. You know, it's becoming something that people are aware of. And I think we're making waves. I think we're heading in the right direction. And we'll get there in the end. Linux will be prevalent. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's the thing that I'm really conscious of is that we don't get too romanticized by our success. We always need to keep our eyes on the prize. Make sure that we're moving forward.
Well, John, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate you, staying up late and talking to us. We wish you guys all the best with Lug Radio Live USA as well as Lug Radio UK.
Oh, thank you. No, I really appreciate coming on, guys. You guys have got a really good show going here. I can see all of the rabbiting going on in the IRC channel as well. Pretty cool.
I'm only doing a couple of shows, you know.
Thank you for all the work you have done. I look forward to Lug Radio New York. I wish I could be at any of the Lug Radios. And just keep doing the top-notch job that you're doing. My hat's
absolutely
off to you.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate that.
Thanks again, Jono. You know, again, you're always welcome to come on the show. You know, and we know it's awfully late for you, but extend that invitation to, you know, the rest of the fellas as well. Tell everybody we said hello.
Speaking of the rest of the fellas, what the hell are they doing to promote Lug Radio Live? I only hear you going out there and doing it.
The writing is coattails.
Seriously, man, get them off their asses.
Yeah, basically, the promotional side of things falls to me. It's my job. The other guys do some other bits on some of the other stuff on the show. So I always seem to get the promo side of things stuff to go out there and start rabbiting at people about Lug Radio Live. So, yeah, I'll certainly pass on your regards, and you guys have got to come on our show as well sometime. This is the second time I've been on your show, so you guys should come on ours.
I have one more question before you leave. Last year, 2 years ago, and damn it, I can't remember his name now. We met one of your former bosses. He was at...
it was Paul.
Paul.
Yeah, Cooper. Mm-hmm.
Paul Cooper, that's it. How's he doing?
He's doing great, yeah. He's not at Open Advantage anymore. He's moved on to a different role and seems pretty happy. I haven't spoken to him for a little while because he's been busy. But yeah, he had very high things to say of you guys. I'll never forget getting back into the office because I was doing the UK Lug tour at the time with Ted Hager from Novell. And Ted and I got into the office very tired, having travelled quite a lot that week. And my desk was covered in very small plastic army figures. It was like the whole desk was covered in them. and there was a Linux Link Tech Show t-shirt on there as well. So, yeah, very cool. he seems to be doing well, and I think he's having a good time in his new job.
Send our regards to Paul.
He was very fun to hang out with, and coincidentally spoke very highly of you as well for some reason.
I don't know why that is. Yeah. He's my boss. He should be speaking low of me.
Yes, definitely pass on our regards and tell him, we said hi. And we miss him.
Yeah.
He was a great guy. Not that he's, like, dead to us or anything, but he is a great guy.
If you're not in the room with Dan, you're dead to him.
That's right.
We used to have another host on our show named Alan, and he passed away today. So...
Is that I can never remember which one of you guys looks like Ack.
That's him.
Is that
him? Yeah.
Poor guy.
He's the one that never
guy.
That's unfortunate. It's a birth defect.
Shameful. We did have a question earlier in the IRC.
Okay.
Whether on laptops, if you prefer pads or nipples.
Pads. Can't do with nipple thing. They're just... No. They're just weird. My computer should not have a nipple. You know?
Let me ask you another opinion on something. What is your feeling on desktops using big-ass analog clocks?
And what about shows doing big-ass RSS feeds?
I mean, we don't worry about the RSS feeds anymore. It's the big-ass analog clock still in existence. Like you've seen... You had Vista on your ThinkPad, and I know you're probably dual-booting Vista and Linux, and you're just telling everybody you're not. But what do you see? I mean, you've seen pictures of Vista where they have the digital clock down there in a system tray and an analog clock widget on the desktop. I mean, first off, that's asinine and redundant, but... Why an analog clock on
you need
a computer?
You need to get with it. This is the new era. It's clock 2.0. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to have some form of gradient-filled analog clock on there.
When does Ubuntu come out with its big-ass analog clock? Like, is that when we know that Ubuntu has hit it big?
Yeah.
And it comes out with the next release comes out with this giant analog clock in the corner?
KDE 4.0 has it.
Yeah, well, you know when people talk about the year of the Linux desktop, that's when you've got a big-ass analog clock in the corner. It's official when that happens. That's why KDE 4 are including, you know, the ability to add so many clocks there.
I could see Ubuntu taking a different route, and instead of providing an analog clock on their desktop, they're going to port their entire Ubuntu distribution onto a clock, and it's going to be called Clockuntu or something, or Anauntu. It's just going to be an analog clock running Ubuntu.
Yeah.
And then they're going to create like loco groups about it. It's just the loco analog Ubuntu clock group. Would that be
I feel like I've accidentally tuned into some kind of clock fetishist podcast. Wow. Yeah. I think analog clocks are the way forward, you know. That's what you've got to have. Wobbling windows and analog clocks. It's the future.
A pulsing clock.
Works as a stuff.
And you know what? Instead of numbers, it could be like the icons of your preferred application around the clock's face.
I think we need to stop this conversation. I think
that. And you could only use that of laptops. People would be carrying wall clocks to work with them. You know.
That is, it's a perfect timepiece. The timepiece plus your personal, micro laptop. Somebody asks you the time, it's right there. And if you're working for a company, they can set it so you can only use certain applications at certain times. So during work hours, you can't play Frozen Bubble unless it's at lunchtime. It's like 12:30 or something. Then Frozen Bubble, when the arrow points to Frozen Bubble, you can play it. The clock's the end of the clocks.
I think you might really something here.
You know, this is what he's going to go to Shuttleworth with this tomorrow. He's going to like, I have this brilliant idea.
Suite. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to claim all the credit for this.
And he's going to make $1 million. He's going to be like this awesome celebrity, even more than he is now.
What
people
really
are just going to
compete
gonna
with
love
this
him.
Is a giant analog clock. Yeah.
That's it. He's going to be like Flavor Flav.
Yeah, it's just going to be exactly like that. Oh, hang on a second. No, it isn't.
It would just, but instead of Flavor Flav, it would be John O'John, or John O'Joe.
Oh, yeah, that's what we need.
Yeah, John O'Joe. John O'John. His analog clock hanging from his neck. Whatever happened to Chicosher, is that still going on?
Yeah, it exists. Basically, Chicosher's like in a state right now where it's basically done, but it just needs some bug fixing to happen. And I mean, I got really busy, so I couldn't spend any time on it. And this is kind of like a lot of G-streamer bug fixing that needs to happen. And then the other core developer, Laszlo, has kind of become really busy as well. He's got a new job and all the rest of it, I think. So what it needs, it just needs someone to go in there and spend some time fixing some of these bugs, and then we can stick out 1.0. But it's a project. I mean, like, my life has got inordinately busier in the last year for my life has been one hell of a roller coaster, to say the least. And you know, in my professional life and in my personal life as well. So it's been I just haven't had time for Chicosher, unfortunately. So we just need someone to go in there and fix some of these bugs and then make a release.
Will Chicosher have an analog clock?
I believe there may be an analog clock clicking. I think that would, it's just, yeah. You need to get off this analog clock thing. It's worrying me now. That's beginning to freak me out.
We'll have to send you some analog clocks in the mail.
I don't think I'm going to be giving you my address.
I have your address. I'm sure I can find your address.
I think you've got a wall with telephoto lens photos of me leaving my house, haven't you?
That's right. Well, we track you through Google Maps these days.
Good grief.
That's it. Google Maps, we got a little GPS on that.
Frightening Google Maps, man.
And,
don't get us wrong. We love Google, man, but that Google Maps thing is creepy.
It's a Google Maps thing.
You type somebody's name plus the state they live in, you get directions to their house with a nice map.
Oh, I heard about that, yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's see if we can follow up on John O'Bacon on Google Maps.
We'll follow up on it.
That's weird. John O'Bacon's house comes up next to a gay bathhouse.
Aye.
Now we know why he's in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with the low radio.
Awesome. You know, I thank you for coming on again. I don't want to keep you up any later than we already have.
No, I really appreciate it, guys. And thanks to all of your crazy fans in the IRC channel. I've just been watching all the random discussion going on there as well.
And thank you. You're more than welcome to come on at any time, and keep doing a great job.
Yep. Best of luck with Lug Radio Live, man.
Thanks, John.
Thanks a lot, guys.
To you.
Thank
Take
you.
Care of yourself, guys.
Have a good one.
Bye.
See ya, bye.
See ya. And
Pat, what is it that you type into Google to get somebody's address?
You type their name plus
you
the state they live
in. You just type in Pat Davila, and it gives you his address and his phone number and everything, right?
Exactly. What were you going to say? Plus what?
Plus the state they live in.
Oh.
You get, like, directions to the house and, you know, phone number and...
It's crazy stuff, man.
Pictures from space. Privacy be damned.
I hear they have some kind of thing going on now where, like, they're suppressing photos over top of military bases or some kind of crap like that. I don't know.
Yeah, they were busted or something, some military base or some, what is it, the Army or something that said they're not going to cooperate with Google anymore because, or they're not going to allow the Google Maps people on their bases anymore because they didn't blank out one of their military installations or something.
Some crazy crap.
I don't know.
What are you going to do?
Cry.
Yeah. So anyway, here's what I want to know, right?
Go ahead.
It was nice having you on this week, Link. Thanks a lot, and we'll catch you later.
Bite my ass.
Special guest star, Link Visitor.
And there's not much there to bite, so you're going to have to be selective, right? I've been doing a lot of coding again lately. And I have been using, for a very long time, I've been using Subversion, right? Because, you know, Subversion is what happened when they actually fixed the stupid broken shit of CVS. So anyway, been using Subversion lately, and just out of curiosity, I decided to look around at other versioning software. And I'm looking at, like, Git and stuff like this. Another one starts with D. I can't remember what the hell it's called, what the hell name of it is again. But what are you guys using, and have you used any of this stuff like Git, and what are the advantages and disadvantages that you see? Do you even know what the hell I'm talking about? You know?
SVN a little bit. I haven't checked out Git, but I've used SVN.
Yeah, we use Subversion at work all the time, and it is really good. I've never played around with Git.
Mm. See, now, I love Subversion, because, like I said, that's what happened when they actually fixed all the broken shit in CVS. And I really dig it. It works wonderful. But I'm looking at this new era, I guess, of this versioning software stuff, like Git and the other ones that I can't remember the name of. They have this thing on there where, like, everybody is their own, like, repository maintainer kind of thing, you know? And, which is something that I just don't get. It seems kind of alien to me that everybody maintains their own master portion of the repository and sync up with other people. And, you know, for some reason, to me, that seems to be a step backwards when you would have to somehow go through several revisions of your own code in order to get it to match up with a master version or someone else's code. It's just it's really odd. And I just wanted to, you know, if you guys had any experience or input on it, but, you know, since you don't.
Well, how much of a difference is that from, like, Subversion, where you check out your own copy and then merge it back in? I mean, isn't that essentially, like,
here's what I got out of it. Git, right? What happens with this is that each person, you know, maintains their own repository, their own code repository, wherever. And they can do... revisions and commits and the whole big thing with that on their own repository, and then they can also take that repository and merge it with like someone else's version. And then I would imagine you would have to go through and make any, you know, make any necessary changes so that you could do a clean merge, you know, a clean code merge. But to me, that, like I said, it just seems like an odd, that's a good answer for a small project, but for a giant project where there's all these different repositories or all these potential, you know, master repositories and branches or whatever, when you try to merge them all together, you know, first of all, it seems like that would be a huge pain in the ass. And second of all, it seems like you would have to, you know, you would be constantly going through someone else's code trying to get your code to merge in with the branch. And maybe I'm not understanding it right, but that's kind of what I was getting out of it. And anyway, thought I'd bring it up.
Haven't had a chance to use it.
Were you talking about DCS or DARCS? I'm sorry, D-A-R-C-S.
DARCS, yes. DARCS is like that. Git is like that. And there's a couple other ones. One starts with an M. I can't remember what the hell it's called. But yeah, if you look at like the documentation for DARCS and Git, it conceptually, they're very much the same. But it's a little foreign to people who are used to like the old tried and true CVS and Subversion. It's a different sort of system. Yeah, Mercurial, Jay Lindsay said. That's the one I was talking about.
Well, I would guess that using one of those would be very similar to using Subversion or CVS when merging two trees together. You would obviously have to fix a lot of the conflicts.
Right, but see, here's the thing, right? That's absolutely correct. And you know, the base functionality of these things is just, you know, they're all pretty much the same. You do your any changes, and then you commit your changes back to your repository, right? But the problem is, if there are several repositories, and then you at some point in time do a commit between repositories to bring them all, you know, to merge them all together, what happens if there are several revisions of changes, you know, between repositories, and then you have to go back, you know, and fix your code so that you can merge everything all together again? It just seems kind of, you know, anti-intuitive. And, you know, whereas with the old stuff like CVS and Subversion, the repository is in a central place, okay? And every time you make a change, you do an update, and then you commit your changes back, and in that process you find out if there are any changes right then and there, and merge all the code and make it cool. You don't keep working on stuff that doesn't work, or that you can't merge back into you can't commit for several revisions, and then, you know, go back and fix it.
It's called nightmare.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
That's what I thought. I thought that would be crazy, but you know, that's the Git system of doing things, and you know, they're running the kernel. They're doing a Linux kernel. Is they're using Git for that. So perhaps I'm, you know, more than perhaps, I must be missing something somewhere, some sort of magical portion of this whole system that I don't understand that makes a lot of sense to somebody else, because it really doesn't to me. So,
well, I'm wondering, in the situation with, like, the kernel, I don't get the sense that you have a lot of people working on the whole thing, as opposed to a handful
people working
of people
on certain
working on
sections,
yeah, that they would probably merge their sections together, and then it would get one big merge back into the full code. So, you know, generally, what a small group of people is working on probably doesn't cross over to what another group of people would be working on. Like, you know, the like one of the SCSI module maintainers is probably not going to be making any code contributions to a, the ham radio module or something.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's more distributed in that way. Whereas if you had like a couple hundred people working on something like OpenOffice Writer, might be a little more difficult to manage with a distributed system like that, as opposed to a more monolithic system like Subversion or CVS. Maybe.
It's probably a good explanation of it.
Of course it is. Now, I will charge
coming
you
from
my
point of view, I just can't
that.
See doing it that way. But
no, I hear you, and I'm I think it depends on what it's what you're working on. If it's a handful of small people, even then, if it's a handful of small people working on a rather large distributed code base,
anything where they're going to cross cross paths in coding, I just see that the distributed method. You know, of Git and Darks and what the hell was the other one? Mercurial. That just sounds like it'd be such a monster pain in the ass to me. But like I said, I might be missing something completely and just not understand it correctly.
Well, I hope that maybe one of our listeners out there could write in and correct Link if he is wrong, which is most likely the case.
I just figured, I would ask you, Dan, and, because you code all day long, and you would know.
Yeah, but we use Subversion.
You
have
failed me again,
you
pecker.
I know. I'm a loser. We use Subversion. We don't use Git. I think when Git was mentioned, it was our administrator said, hell no.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I've been using Subversion myself. Doing code, I've been coding for years and years too, and I use Subversion myself. Been using it forever, and in fact, recently, for those of you who read my weblog, recently I finally, for the first time, set up a DAV based Subversion repository, which I'm really digging. By the way, it's kind of a cool thing to do. Before, I really didn't think it mattered any, big deal. The cool part about having a DAV-based Subversion repository is that you can browse it, without doing a checkout of your project. You can browse this repository and just, pick different bits and pieces of stuff out of there and just pull it up on your web browser, and that's completely handy in some cases. You know what I mean? Actually, in quite a few, I found it. That's been really cool. Just from anywhere, I can browse through there and pick a particular PHP script or something and download it.
Uh-huh.
And run it, and that's just cool as shit, man. I don't find it to be any much slower or anything like that. It's a bit of a pain in the ass getting it to work right with OSSEC, but such is life.
Awesome.
I got a couple of cool apps that I checked out this week I want to mention. The first one is Secret Mario. Now, Mario spelled M-A-R-Y-O. The game is called Secret Mario Chronicles. And it's a cool platform-type game that is available in the Ubuntu repositories. You can also go to the website and download it. And it's a very cool game. I was playing it with my son, and we both enjoyed playing it. It's really fun. Nice graphics, nice music. A little bit of a retro, Mario Brothers kind of look to it. But just, a little more newer and fresher. Have either one of you guys played Secret Mario Chronicles?
Yes.
I don't really get to play any games, so.
I have.
It's a cool game, right?
Yeah, it is really good. That was one of the games I tried playing on the GPC when I had it, and it runs like a top on my laptop. It ran fairly well on the GPC, although it took a long time to load in all the textures and everything. I mean, a really long time that my daughter got frustrated at having to wait at how long it took to load in the textures. But once it was up and running, I mean, they did a tremendous job on that.
It's only slow the first time you actually run it, the very first time, but after that it comes up pretty quickly, at least on my system.
Yeah, that's definitely worth checking out. I mean, it's a fun game, especially if you like Mario, the older style. Not Mario 64, but, God, what was the Mario, Super Mario Brothers that was on? I think there was one on the Super Nintendo that it's more akin to. The Lost Levels of Mario, it was included on there. The ones on the Super Nintendo, which have really nice, crisp graphics, but it wasn't the 3D Mario 64-type environment.
Yeah, all those old platform games are all a lot of fun, you know? You go from, like, Mario Brothers to, like, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog. That whole style of games, I always enjoyed them. And then there's some decent ones on Linux.
Have you tried Pingus?
A little bit, yeah.
I like that a lot.
That's got cool graphics. They're fun games, you know? You don't have to spend a lot of time playing, and then, you know, you can walk away from it any time. You know, Super Talks. It's good stuff.
Super Talks is a beautiful game.
Yeah,
that is,
it did a great job.
That is another awesome game. I love Super Talks. Can you hear me, Pat?
I can hear you, man.
Can you hear me? What was the other game? You said a couple of programs.
Oh, I also was checking out Handbrake GTK. I actually saw this article on Linux.com, and they were talking about applications to use to rip DVDs in Linux. And they talked about several different applications, and one that I wanted to check out that I've heard of was called Handbrake, which is a Windows and Mac program, I believe. And it looks like they ported it over to Linux. And I believe it's
actually,
either Kano.
I think it was BOS that was developed on initially, and it got ported from there over to the Mac. And the cool thing about it under BOS, everything in that operating system is set up to be multi-threaded. So that multi-threaded nature was ported over, and it ports to different operating systems, and it works really, really well in that fashion.
Yeah, I tried ripping
and it just pegs all your processors, you know?
I did a couple DVDs, and it did a pretty good job. It does MPEG-4. You can use X264 or I don't know if it's FFmpeg also, or you could use it in the background, and it does a nice job, no problems, you know, good quality videos.
Of course, when you did that, you were visiting another country, right?
No, I was using my own DVDs that I purchased legally.
Yeah.
But he installed the software while he was visiting a European country.
Right. An undisclosed European country which allows that sort of thing. In fact, I was at the same, next door in the same undisclosed European country when I was playing with that recently, trying to make in that country a completely legal backup of my 30 Days of Night DVD for my own personal backup purposes, of course. And
now, did you buy that DVD or did you rent that DVD?
I did buy it, and you know what the most frustrating thing about that is? And I would love to hear from anybody on this, too. I am so frustrated with that because it's one of those Sony DVDs, right? And I have 8 DVD players in my house, right, counting all the ones in my computers and stuff like that. Out of the 8 DVD players, I can watch the entirety of that movie on one of them. Because it gets to a certain spot, and I bought 2 of the DVDs just because I, you know, was wondering if it was a issue with scratches or something like that. Gets to a certain spot, at like chapter 25 or something like that, and it just flips out and skips ahead like 10 minutes in the movie. So I figured that I would run very quickly to this undisclosed European country and
put that DVD and, you know, in a computer and rip it so that I could actually watch the damn thing, you know? And I can't find anything that'll do that either. And it really is annoying. You know what I mean? I'd like to have it in a format that I could watch the freaking movie, you know, the entire way through, and I wouldn't be tied to one specific DVD player in my house. Ideally, you know, I like to watch it on my N800 on the train and back and forth to work or something like that, but I can't find anything that'll rip the damn thing, nor can I even watch it, and it really pisses me off. And then it's called Handbrake.
You tried Handbrake?
I downloaded the new version of, the newest version, command line version, I thought, anyway, of Handbrake, and I believe that didn't work either. However, you know, I might be mistaken. I'll have to give that another try. But if anybody has gotten it to work, please, you know, let me know how the hell you did it. Because it really is pissing me off. I mean, you spend, it's like $22, right, to buy a damn DVD from Hollywood Video. And then to come home and find out that it doesn't work and you figure it's busted or scratched and take it back and get another one, it's the exact same problem. That's very frustrating. Fuck you, Sony.
So what are you inferring? Like, Sony winning the high-definition awards is not a good thing? I don't believe it. Based on Sony's track record? Come on.
They should fucking die. That's what I think. They piss me off. It's like, you know.
Yeah, Sony
really
does not have a good...
to see that movie.
Sony does not have a good track record when it comes to, you know, certain technologies that they implement. You know, they tend to go their own way and ram it down everybody else's throat.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they just pissed me off. But, you know, what the hell are you going to do?
Exactly.
And Bugs says, you know, torrents will give you justice. And that is true. I could probably, but here's the deal, right? Even though I know I could go out and download this movie off of a BitTorrent, and then I could watch it and be cool with it, I still feel weird about downloading a movie off of BitTorrent, even though I own the damn thing.
No, you don't, you know, own the movie. You're...
Even though I bought it on the particular media that they sell it on, right? You know, I bought the DVD. I still feel odd about downloading it off of BitTorrent. And I know I shouldn't. You know what I mean? Well, according to, you know, the MPAA, you should. But I think they're full of crap, too. I should be able to, if I pay to watch that movie, you know, if I pay to have it on media in my home, so that I can watch it, I should be able to watch it. You know, I shouldn't have to go out and buy some special fucking DVD player somewhere. You know, God knows what kind of DVD player you gotta buy just so you watch a damn movie.
You know, you might think you're making sense, but you're wrong.
Yeah, well, in their eyes, yeah, I am.
That's the way it goes.
It's unfortunate, and it's true. Perhaps someday they will correct that, what I believe to be wrong behavior. I'm thinking about a hold my breath, but, you know.
Yeah, that stays. You know, Pat, you had to go mention Super Tux, and my wife wanted to play it on her Triple E.
It's a fun game.
Yeah, I had to just drop it on there for it. Installed, and she's hammering away at it. She's on some, she has a nasty sinus infection and some medication, is about to pass out, so. Little Super Tux before bed, never hurt anybody.
There you go.
Yeah, a great website for, like, stuff that's not into, if you're a Ubuntu user and there's certain packages that are not available in the repos, you can go to getdeb.net, and they have a lot of decent packages in there that you can install on your Ubuntu system. I just downloaded the Second Life client for Linux. I haven't checked that out yet.
Oh my god!
I wanted to check it out for a little bit, just for fun.
Ugh! Wow! Can you check that out for free?
I believe so. I don't think they charge you.
I don't know. I
don't plan on spending anything. If it costs something, I'm not going to go in there. I don't think it does though.
I've been playing with Alpine lately. You guys know what that is?
No, what is that?
Alpine is a relicensed newer version of Pine, the email program. And as at least Dan probably recalls, I was a huge proponent of Pine for a very long time.
I didn't know that you weren't anymore. I thought you were.
I haven't used it in quite some time. I've been pretty much strictly Thunderbird. But I had occasion, and this is a funny story, right? We had a problem with a server at work, and it had a little monitor script on it. And this monitor script would send an email to my account saying that a program was not working. And it got stuck in a loop one night, and it sent me, no lie, it sent me like 30,000 emails. Now, Thunderbird really does not like that. That pretty much chokes Thunderbird to death, you know, and it just comes to a grinding halt and does nothing. So I was trying to figure out a way to get into my mail queue and clean all that crap out. And I thought to myself, you know, it's been a really long time since I have used Pine, and why wouldn't I just, you know, try that? And it's a nice little, you know, command line client, real quick and everything. RFab says, does Pine work like MUT or does it have a SMTP POP built into it? It does work a lot like MUT. However, it does have its own SMTP built into it, and you can do POP and or IMAP, and it works very, very well. but anyway, to continue the story, I tried to get Pine on Ubuntu, but Pine is not a free package. So it's very difficult to get, you know, because of the Washington State license, or WSU license, it's hard to get a Debian package with Pine on it. You can get, like, the tar package and build it, but I was kind of in a hurry. And I looked around a little more, and apparently they have... over there, they have realized that their license was a little bit restrictive and hampering people from using their wonderful software. So they have updated and re-released Pine as another project called Alpine, which also comes with a file browser and a new editor, kind of like a Pico-like editor sort of thing. Basically, it's the same thing. It's just rebadged, you know, under a different license, a little bit updated. So, I got this thing and installed that on there, and I, you know, long story short, it works really well, just the way I remember using it. No problems at all. I'm really digging it. And if anybody out there is looking for a really fast email client, you know, that has its own SMTP server so that you can, you know, you can send emails without, like, you know, MUT, you have to configure a separate one and all kinds of. This just works. It's very cool. Check it out, Alpine, A-L-P-I-N-E. But anyway, that did solve my problem. I was able to use Alpine and open up that mail queue and delete 30,000 messages in a much more expedient fashion.
Sweetness. Alpine.
Alpine, yes.
Very cool software. Alpine. And you give it the two thumbs up?
Two thumbs, yep.
Bow, bow, bow. What did I do this week? Not much. I talked to Dave Yates. And all those losers on his chat. I mean, his wonderful people on his IRC.
Oh, speaking of IRC, I want to mention another application.
Oh, yeah, yeah, talk about that.
Was it Mibit, right?
Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah. Well, you know it. I didn't try it.
Yeah, let me see if I got the link. It's a Web 2.0 IRC client that you run through a browser. It's called Mibit, and you can use it with HTTPS, and it works really well. I use it at work. If you're behind a corporate, you know, proxy server, it works fantastic. I was able to get into IRC channel, all the Freenode IRC channels. It works great, and it's a really nice, slick interface, and it works fantastic.
Sweetness and light.
Nifty, even.
Yeah, that's Mibbit.com, MIBBIT.com. I'll put it on the IRC.
I was trying another IRC program. I mean, I like using IRSSI and screen.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem I have with IRSSI is when you're on more than one channel or people PM you, you got to be extra diligent about.
Got to be sharp, yeah, you miss it.
Or watching, there's little indicators down towards the right above the chat window where you type in that you can watch, but I always miss those. So I was trying out it. NCurses based one called Rhapsody to see whether that would be a little easier to manage, but it doesn't look like it has that kind of alerting that you get with XChat where you can see a different color coding, which is unfortunate. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah, you would think that they'd have some kind of really nifty, and there might be like a Perl plugin or something like that for IRSSI. Where, like, you know, if somebody tries to PM you, that pops up like a split screen or something like that. That would be really handy kind of deal to have. For those of you who are pro programmers and want to make something like that, do it. Let us know. Yeah, that's one of the things that I have a hard time with, too, and that's exactly the thing that I use, IRSSI, and I'm always missing everybody's private messages because they, you know, you just don't get a big enough alert, and by the time I see them, it's like the next show or something like that, and when I finally restart the client, it's all Dan's fault, bastard.
A couple of things I want to bring up to our listeners' attention for people who may be somewhat new listeners. We have a huge catalog of shows, and we've talked to a ton of people in the almost 5 years that we've been doing this show. If you go to our website, tllts.org, at the very top, there's Search Our Show Index. There's a little field there. You could type in, say, somebody you might know or a topic, and you'll get back a nice, listing of shows with the possible topics. It's a real useful utility. And if you want to go check out some of the older episodes, it's a great way to listen to some of the great shows that we've done. And another thing I wanted to bring up was our Folding at Home team. We've cracked the top 1% of all superclusters.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't even know that. I just let my shit run, you know?
Yeah, we're like 900 something, which is top 1%.
Where do you see that statistic?
There's
tell
a statistic.
Tell me where to find that so I can actually keep track of that.
You know why we cracked that? I'll tell you why we cracked that, because I started Folding at Home about a month ago after I got chastised for not doing it, and it's because of me we did it.
Well, see, you're the holdout.
Yeah, that's it. That's the whole reason why.
All right, so you go to the community page, and down
right
the
now
bottom
it's being
of the community
updated.
Page is a Folding at Home, right?
They sporadically update it, so check back in a little bit or in the morning, and you'll see the stats. But you'll see
now,
who
does
the top.
It tell you, it tells you on the Folding at Home page, or are you looking at like the CACO stats or EOC stats thing?
It's got the stats, and it has us as a team. It shows everybody who's part of the team, how many CPUs we have, what load each person's doing, you know, what's their ranking, what's their team ranking in the Folding at Home universe. So if someone has like a machine that they leave on all the time and it's not active all the time, you know, I definitely recommend installing Folding at Home and joining the TLLTS Folding at Home team. And we can help contribute to helping finding the cure for some really bad diseases. Supposedly they've made progress on it. It's actually made substantial finds. I've read. So it's definitely working. So if you got spare CPU cycles, please contribute to it.
Yeah.
Woo, woo, woo!
I've said my piece.
Did you?
Yes. Next week we're talking to...
What a little piece it is.
Oh, thank you. Next week we're talking to Peter Samohack, the founder and CEO of Bug Labs.
Cool. Of what lab?
Bug Labs.
What are Bug Labs?
Bug Labs is this company that makes these little embedded kits where you can put together your own embedded devices. For instance, they have like different modules that snap together. For instance, you can make like a multimedia player. You can make like an embedded home monitoring system, with a camera and audio. It's really interesting. Well, we'll get into it next week with Peter next week.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly, Dan.
Yeah.
I concur.
All right, no. Huh. I don't know. I was just trying to figure something out. I don't know.
You're always trying to figure out something, Dan.
Yeah, what am I going to do?
How's that EEPC holding up for you?
Oh, it's great. I love it.
So you're still using it every day? The honeymoon period hasn't worn off yet?
No. I have it by my side, constantly.
You haven't done any video rendering, have you?
On the EEPC?
Yeah, I want to see a supercluster made up of EEPCs.
Yeah, that would be something. But
it's like that guy who clustered a bunch of Commodore 64s together. You ever seen that one?
Was that music cool. coming through somewhere?
Yeah, somebody actually did that, I think. I think it was equivalent to a Pentium 4, running at 1.8 gigahertz or whatever.
Oh, I don't think it was that fast.
300 Commodore 64s.
I don't know.
Very geeky. It's a very geeky thing, It's fun, though. People just go out and do stuff like that for the hell of it. You guys got anything else to add?
No.
No, I'm fresh out, man.
You're done. Stick a fork in you.
Appreciate everybody coming to listen to us, tonight on our latest show, this one being 236. That's a whole lot of shows.
What season is that?
What season is it for us?
Yeah, what is
Do we
say?
Have a season?
Spring 2008.
This is our first season. It's our first season. 236 shows in our first season.
Yes,
or is
it
our
second
season? Because we actually took a couple of weeks off.
Yes, we're American. Like American soaps, they go on forever, like 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
So it just keeps on going.
Like Timex. We're the Timex of the Linux and open source podcasts.
So you're
that others have said would not last.
So you're admitting we're a podcast, Link, huh?
No. We do podcast, but we are a web radio show.
Works for me. Dan, you gonna play a song?
Yeah. What do we want to play? Play, play. All right, you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. This is Shiva.
Shiva in Exile. Little World Music.
Everybody. Thanks for everybody listening. Bye, 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 bye.
Have a good night, everybody.
Bye.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up. It's over.